Hey, I'm James from Content Snare, and this is Between Two Ledges. Today's guest is Amy Holdsworth, who almost needs no introduction. Everyone I know seems to know who she is. She is quite the personality. She's at pretty much every event I ever go to in the accounting space. She's been at the forefront of accounting tech for a long time and helps people choose the right tech, put the right processes in place to run their accounting firms. So we get into quite a lot today, including things like what ops even means, because that was confusing to me. Why, like, being busy. Theory of constraints as applied to accounting. The exact checklist of things that you should not be doing. We get into lots of topics today, including things like what ops even is in an accounting firm, a theory of constraints as applied to accounting, exactly what accountants should not be doing, how and why you should let go of control of what everyone in your firm is doing, and a bunch more topics. And with that, I bring you Amy Holdsworth. Miss Amy Holdsworth, how are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you, Mr. James Rose. How are you?
Oh, doing pretty good. As I was just saying offline, my 18-month-old has stopped waking up at 4:30 and now wakes up at 6, which has turned me into a superhuman the last week.
Oh, my God, an extra 90 minutes of sleep. Who would have thought it?
I was saying to someone the other day, it's like, when before kids, if you have a bad night's sleep, you just feel like trash. Yeah. After kids, you have a good night's sleep and you feel like a superhuman. It's a little bit reversed.
Yeah, go figure.
So just a little bit about who you are. Look, I see you as someone who helps accounting firms just get the right tech and workflows in place. That's how I would describe you. How do you want to expand on that a little bit for people?
Yeah, I think, interestingly enough, that's probably the cookie. Well, that's the thing that we dangle in front of people is the tech side of things. And, you know, because ultimately, when you are selling a service, you need to be pigeonholed. You need to be boxed into something that people can understand. I know that sounds awful, but it just is the way that the human brain works. So if you go accountant, people go, okay, they can get my tax and finance.
I could riff on this for an entire episode. So I feel you.
Yeah, you're right. So ours is, originally when we first started doing this, when I first started consulting, I could have called myself a virtual practice manager. But the challenge with that is that most accounting practices don't understand what the role of a practice manager should actually be. There are so many varying breadths and ways to slice and dice that it's very hard to actually go, you could be a virtual practice manager, because if they don't know what a practice manager is, then what the hell is a virtual one, basically, right? So that got kiboshed. And, you know, then it was consulting around business processes and that kind of stuff. And we were sort of fine. And then I had this wonderful idea where I was like, oh, okay, I nearly started an accounting practice. And I am delighted by the fact that I never proceeded with that little business venture. I think that it was the right move at the right time to not proceed. Anyway, at the time that we were doing it, though, I went through this process of whiteboarding all the tech. And at that point, that's when I had this little epiphany of, I'm like, everybody needs to understand how the tech actually connects, which is what I was effectively doing. So created the app stack image, which is currently what we're very well known for. But realistically, that is maybe 10% of what we actually do in relation to our projects and the service that we actually provide at Clarity Street. So yes, it is tech focused, but if an accounting practice contacts us and, you know, they need help with whatever, they think that they're contacting us because they have a problem with their tech, which to a degree, obviously they do, but realistically that's about 10% of what their problems are. The other 80 to 90% is people and process related. It's about who's doing what, how they're doing it, why they're doing it, just mindset, mentality. There's so much to unpack with that whole little topic. So for the most part, we help accounting practices optimize their internal operation is the best way I can say it. Yes, with a tech focus, of course, but it's realistically being a virtual practice manager. Ironically. But you can't sell that. You can't sell that one. You've got to sell it as a tech implementation partner, basically. So
now it's funny, like, that intro has basically made me change where I want to go with this entire episode.
Okay.
Into that 90%. But I almost laughed out loud when you said like no one knows what a practice manager is, because I have a question.
Yes.
Written down.
You do.
What? Well, it was slightly different. It's like, what the fuck is ops? Because yeah. In my research, like you were ops essentially at a previous accounting firm, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny because I've been talking to my like mastermind group that have other SaaS products, and they have like an ops manager. I'm like, what the fuck is an ops manager? Mm-hmm. So honestly, I'm very happy to hear you say that like a lot of accounting firms don't know what ops slash practice management is. They seem very related. So maybe define it for me, because even I'm the idiot on this one and I need to like, you know, set the stage here.
So to answer your question, ops slash practice management slash admin, anything that happens is, in my opinion, defined by anything that a qualified accountant shouldn't be doing. So shouldn't be doing, right? So if you are a qualified accountant, my role as an administrator or an ops person in practice, I can't do some of the things that you are qualified to do, which therefore means that everything else is ops, in my opinion. So providing advice, doing a tax return, doing a set of financials, doing that advisory piece around the financial components, I can give broad spectrum business advice, but realistically, I can't give the legal-backed qualification, guideline, actual tax accounting advice. I can't do that as an ops person. Therefore, in my opinion, everything else falls under my realm, and or it should.
So it's kind of like just running the business, making sure things are happening.
It is making things happen, right? So it is managing workflow. You're effectively, I like to, a good analogy is like a triage ER, like a triage nurse from an ER perspective is a good practice manager. Mm. You are spot firing. You are making sure people are doing the right things, going to the right places, making sure that things are getting seen, dealt with, et cetera, et cetera. You aren't processing the work. You're making sure that the work is getting done in a timely manner. So invoicing, workflow, onboarding, processes, procedures, probably a little bit of HR, depending on what size your business is. Mm. That's not always true and correct. But, and then marketing, client acquisition to a certain degree, whatever that process is.
That's
and a whole limit, basically.
It's basically anything that's not done by someone else, really.
Correct, literally, that's it.
It makes a lot of sense, because like a lot of like assistant, like EA type people become ops people, or the other way around even. Yeah.
That's how I started. Like I was originally an EA. I worked for a couple of hotels. I became an EA. I then worked for investment banking companies as one of the group team members, you know, like the PA to the like one of the trading floors, that kind of stuff. And then I transitioned into the accounting space, et cetera. But I mean, to that end, like whilst we talked about what Clary Street does and what we're known for, we've also created another service recently specifically dedicated to practice managers and ops people, because there's just nothing in the industry. It's called Project 95, and there's nothing in the industry around supporting ops people in the industry. Everything out there is for accountants or business owners, like CPA discussion groups or CA discussion groups, monthly catch-ups. They are all accountant-related. All of the events, all of the apps, all of the webinars, they're all directed realistically at accountants, and there's nothing in the industry that is there supporting the operations people in practice. Not to mention, in practice, you're also a minority within the practice, because it's usually one or two admin. Like in a team of, call it 12 to 14 people, there's usually maybe 2 to 3 admin, if that. Right. You're a minority. So you don't even have a majority of people to actually bounce ideas off and things like that. So it's basically small group coaching, monthly accountability for the ops people admin. So we're not taking over the role of like some of the other really good industry-related coaches, because they do, you know, their bread and butter is the business owners and the accountants. Ours is very much focused on the ops and support team, who typically are getting told by those guys what to execute on and pull it all together.
Yeah, I really like this idea. So I'm in this group called DC. It's just like an online remote business type group. Anyway, I'm in their masterminds where they match up with other business owners just to talk. Yeah. They've started doing masterminds for ops people. Slash assistance, and it's like the feedback has been incredible. So, like I can see this being amazing. I haven't got my assistant in there yet, but hopefully soon.
Yeah.
When you've been talking about this, like ops for as the work that, you know, an accountant is not doing,
In a firm, is it typical that the accountant is like, are they the constrained resource? Like, if you look at the process from start to finish, is the accountant the roadblock because they've got so much to do? That's kind of holding up it, like, because everything has to go through them, right?
Yeah. It depends on the structure. So the firms that allow their accountants to do a lot of the non-accounting work, like doing the quotes, like doing the invoices, like following up clients with queries and or requesting the relevant information to begin before they start the job, those kinds of things. There are some caveats to what I've just said. I don't want to blanket it, but for the firms that are allowing their accountants to do that level and that detailed block of work, they are the roadblock, 100%. The firms that very much get the accountants to just do accounting work and then remove everything else from their plate are the ones that are really efficient. But the challenge with that, though, is, you know, this probably sounds a little bit harsh, but in some aspects, the accountant is like the brickie's labourer.
Okay. Fair.
I know that sounds a bit brutal. Like, you need them to do the work. You need them to process the work and just get the shit done. Just do the accounting work. Don't fluff around with everything else. And this is in the more, sorry, for context, I'm talking in the more compliance-focused firms, the firms that do more heavy advisory stuff. Yes, there is grey area in this, but the real compliance-focused firms, just do the work. Just get the accounting work done. There is no need for you to do an invoice. There's no need for you to, you can review stuff if you need to, but ultimately you have people there that can actually do that for you. And if you just let the reins go a little and empowered those team members to do it, you would find that you could actually process a lot more work and get through that client work so much quicker as a generalization. Right. So I think that there is a shortage of accountants in the industry, but what I think the shortage is, and this is people have different opinions on this, my feeling is that the shortage is client-facing accountants, not necessarily back-end processing accountants. There's still probably a shortage of them too, but I think the industry is short on client-focused accountants. And I had this conversation yesterday. I happened to be at the tennis. It was lovely. anyway, I was with the Myob crew, actually, and it was a really good chat. And I was just talking about the fact that there is such a stereotype still in the industry about what being an accountant actually is. And it's like, if you think about the trajectory of if you got your accounting degree, where that could actually take you, it's not just necessarily sitting there crunching numbers. Like, it's business conversations. You could go into tech. You could go into services like what we provide. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's such a broad, like, getting an accounting degree kind of almost guarantees you that you'll have work, or it should, until the dawn of time, until you no longer need a job. Because there's so many different avenues that you can take that little qualification in. And it's like, why aren't we having those conversations with year 10 students when they have to have, when they do their careers day and they go, oh, what do I want to do? Because there's such a stereotype still, in my opinion, that, oh, accounting means you're doing a P&L and you're doing figures and you're doing a tax return and that kind of stuff. Because that's what it was when I was in school. And in hindsight, I'm like, wish I had done it. But at the time, I was like, I don't want to know accounting. That sounds boring, man. Now, hilarious. Love what I do. Consult the accounting industry. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's funny. I got stories on there too, but we don't have time for those. But it just made me think a little bit about what you were saying there. A mutual friend of ours, Mr. Andrew Vanderbeek.
Yes.
Seems to be trying to do his part to make accounting cool among younger people, which is really cool. Yeah, I think you're 100% right.
There are, and there are definitely people out there, and I love, like, I know of it, like, he's one of them, and I know that there are heaps of them out there that are trying that, and I think it's great. But, you know, it would be amazing if there was more done with that. And I think that, like, speaking to the guys at Myob, they're like, yeah, we do a bit with universities. And I'm like, well, that's great. I think that's too late. I think you guys need to do it, as I said. Yeah. Year 10, careers day, when you have to sit there and choose your you know, your subjects for your last 2 years at school, that's when...
Yeah, at uni, you've already chosen.
Correct. That's what I mean. You've already chosen.
Yeah. So I really want to dive in on something you mentioned a while ago where talking about accountants, you know, them being the bottleneck when they are doing all the other work.
Yeah.
Because it reminded me a lot of a podcast I've been listened to recently and dove into this topic about theory of constraints. And this dates back to like manufacturing stuff. I can't remember the original author, but like the really short version is like you've got to imagine like a machine on your factory floor that makes widgets, and but like you could, your entire factory can only go as fast as the widget making machine.
Yep.
And so it's almost, that is the constraint. Once you've identified the constraint in the business, like optimizing everything else around that constraint should be your like entire goal, so yep. that they are operating at peak, you know, they're not touching anything before it arrives. It makes a nice neat pile of the thing that's got to get processed into the widget. So as soon as that machine is finished, it picks up the next widget and starts doing, making it, whatever. And then as soon as it's out, everything else is taken care of, right? So is that, I don't know, I'm just applying something I thought I've been learning a lot about recently. Is that kind of the goal here, to make the, like, optimize everything around those accountants?
Yes, is the short answer. Because there's no reason why it shouldn't be. I think that's the bigger thing, right? So I think that there is a very large proportion of accounting practices out there that also have far too many clients on their books as well, and that they aren't able to provide that additional depth of service that they, most of them, seek. I think there was a stat done recently where like 77% of accountants wish that they could be doing more than just your standard compliance work, which is great. But how do you do that? The only way that you can do that is to remove the bottleneck around the compliance work, which allows you the time to obviously execute the additional deeper work that you're actually seeking to do. So yes, get everything around that person or those people within the business. It can only provide that. Optimize. But the issue that you have there is that you have egos. Plain and simple. I literally just had a conversation with a new client of ours where I was like, right, you're a firm that is currently growing via acquisition. You've just acquired a couple of firms, blah, blah, blah. There's still firms that are coming in. There's another one that's coming in a couple of months, that kind of thing. And this is wonderful and this is fabulous. But the aim of the game here is to get some consistency across your processes and procedures. So it's not the accounting business number one versus accounting business number two versus accounting business number three way. And it's not Amy's way in accounting business one or James's in accounting business two's way. It is, what is the outlook for ABC accounting, who is the overall business structure? What is the ABC accounting way of doing things? And that requires everybody to park your egos at the door, because you need to consider and think of the greater good of the business and how everybody's actions will impact each other's, not just in your little role that you fulfill, in every role that is fulfilled from a business perspective. But then not only so you can process the work, but so that the output for your clients is as efficient and as professional as possible. So the only way that that happens, though, is that all of you park your egos at the door and you put a new lens on, and instead of going, yeah, but when I do it like this, I think it's the better way of doing it. Sure, it probably is. But have you considered that if your way is better, that it's impacting this one, this one, this one, this and this one? It might be quicker for you personally to do that thing, but as a generalization, it's probably not. So
it's very mind-blowing to me, because I don't know, maybe my mind's in the wrong spot here, but when I think of like all the work that an accountant quote-unquote shouldn't be doing, it's, for lack of a better word, shit work, like chasing people up for stuff and emailing clients that they haven't, you know, haven't given them the stuff yet.
But why is the accountant doing that?
Why
are they wanting to do that?
Yes, why is ego?
Why are they wanting to do that? Yeah, because... I love having this conversation with you. Because busy dictates I'm important.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah? As opposed to I am producing quality and I'm actually getting the thing done. Like, you think about it, right? It's almost like a badge of honor when somebody says, so how's thing? Oh, I'm so busy. Doing what? Yeah. And why is that a badge of honor? Just because you're busy doesn't mean that you're productive, doesn't mean that you're financially stable, doesn't mean that you're actually profitable as a business.
You can be busy doing stupid shit.
That's my point, right? You can be busy doing stupid shit. So why is it a badge of honor to say that you're busy? Isn't it a better thing to go, I'm actually really, I've got things that are actually quite well coordinated at the moment. Workflow is going really well. I've got the time to spend on the client work that I really want to spend the time on. I'm in a really good space right now. How much better does that sound?
Oh, mate, yeah. But no, because our egos can't let us.
Correct.
It's funny. It's because I'm very aware of this now, right? Like that whole, I've written a few posts about this whole like being busy just for the sake choice. Of it, right? Like, and I try to catch myself, you know, so like someone will say, how's things? I'm like, oh, like, crazy or busy or whatever. Like, yeah. Well, crazy, I think, I don't know, I can use that in different ways. But like, when I say I'm busy, I'm like, I immediately go like, oh shit, like that's actually a bad thing. How can I get less busy? You know, like that's where my brain goes every time I want to tell someone I'm busy now.
Mm. I'm having this issue this week. I'm like, I still haven't done my bloody timesheets. I stupidly introduced timesheets 6 months ago. Actually, to be honest with you, it was one of the best things that we did for our business. So I say stupidly, but equally, I'm like, it was one of the best things that we did for our business from a project perspective, just so we're clear. Anyway, so we've got our strategy day tomorrow and we've got our monthly reporting and that kind of thing. And that requires me to have done my timesheets. And I'm like, I only had a week or two of them to do. Why haven't I been able to do them? But that freaks me out as well because I'm like, oh my God, I'm so busy. And then I'm like, stop it. You are disorganized. That is all it is. You are not busy. You are just currently disorganized because you have chosen to go and have wonderful other experiences that have, you know, taken up elements of time that you hadn't anticipated. And that's fine. Mm. But don't turn around and go, oh, I'm so busy. No, actually, I'm just disorganized and I chose to do other shit over this that I probably should have done instead.
Prioritization. Yeah.
That's all it is.
And so, I mean, and there is, like you said, ego before. There is like it when just doing work makes you feel like you're progressing things.
But it does. Right. It gives you purpose. Mm. So there's nothing wrong with ego. Like, ego is a good and bad thing. Like, it's a double-edged sword. I say it in a sort of a negative connotation in this conversation, but there's really good benefits to having an ego. So please don't misinterpret that one. It's just like, it's that double-edged sword of where it goes. But yeah, sometimes you do, I think, back to your original point, it comes back to everybody thinking more holistically about the business that they work in rather than being very much, you know, like single focus, this is all about me, basically.
So I want to kind of switch gears into some tactical stuff. Hopefully we've made people go like, yeah, okay, I get it. I need to get like some shit off either my plate or my accountant's plates.
Yeah.
What are some examples here? Let's start with like low hanging fruit, or we can do this chronologically through the work process and go like, where are the places that you see people screwing this up the most and getting their accounts to do things that they shouldn't be doing?
Okay. So I have a lovely little slide deck, which no one can see right now, but I'm not going to obviously show that here. The bits that they are buggering up like no end. If there is an accountant doing an invoice, stop it right now. Accountants should never be doing invoicing.
But it only takes a few minutes.
Doesn't matter. Don't care. Exactly. No. Yeah. No. You can, if you really feel the need to, review it. You should not be preparing it.
Everything only takes a few minutes, by the way. And so if you're doing 100 things that only take a few minutes, suddenly there's no fucking day left, is there?
Requesting work, managing workflow. So I believe that the accountants should review what work they're planning to do in the month that they're doing the work, that kind of thing, or in advance. Our recommendation is 6 weeks in advance. But requesting that work, calling that work in, no, not you. That's either an app or that's a human being, which is not an accountant requesting that information. Okay?
So requesting information or requesting work, or is that the same thing?
Both. Requesting information, requesting work. Okay. I'm talking about at the beginning of the job. I'm not talking about queries like mid-job. Queries mid-job is a contentious issue and I'm happy to concede on that one a little bit. All right? But requesting the information to begin with before you even get the job, like, you know, proactively contacting the client to request that information. Yeah. That is not accountant. That is admin. Following up and chasing until the work arrives in the office. Admin, not accountant. Scoping the work. Definitely accountant. If anything's missing, back to admin. Preparing the fee proposal, sending the fee proposal, setting up the job. All of that kind of stuff, not an accountant. Admin, very much admin. Doing the work, accountant. You can do the work. You can do the tax return. You can do the financials. You can give the advice. You can have a client meeting. You can call the client if you have some queries. And or if you do get halfway through the job and you know when you get to query stage, there's a list of queries. You can choose whether it is you, the accountant, sending out that list of queries to the client, whether that's via email, not recommended, whether that's via something like obviously ContentSnare, because that's much more recommended, then do that. But otherwise, that should be stemmed from and include your admin team member. So compiling the original list, accountant, but the follow-up and the chasing of getting the answers to that, admin. At least if you're sending an email, the admin team member should be CC'd in so that when the client only comes back and responds to 3 of the 20 questions, they can chase the client for that.
Yeah, okay? Perfect.
I can totally see why this one's a grey area though, right? Because sometimes
that one is great. Correct.
You're not even sure if yep. the admin might not be sure if it, but if everyone's got access to the same system, correct. Obviously plugging ContentSnare here, you've got the accountant and the admin are able to communicate with each other in there. It doesn't have to be ContentSnare. It could be as long as it's anything. Multiple people, one access point for the client so they're not talking to 3 different people.
Correct.
But then everyone can collaborate on whether it's the right information on the accounting firm end.
Yeah, correct. The work getting reviewed, obviously, that's accountant land, sure. At the end of the job, compiling it, as in getting all the financials, the tax return, putting the pack together, PDFing it, putting in a little sign here, bits and pieces, all the rest, that kind of stuff, not accountant, admin, operations. That's, you know, you're preparing your docs for signing, basically. Sending out an invoice, sending the documents for signing. If you need to prepare an invoice, not accountant. Like if you're doing invoicing at the end of the job, my preference is to do it at the beginning and to take payment at the beginning, but not all firms have adopted that and or they have challenges with that potentially. But if you are doing an invoice at the end, you should not be preparing it. That should be an admin team member preparing it for your review. Hitting the send button to the client. That's what I see all the time. I'm like, why? Why do you feel so important and empowered that it has to come from you? Why can't it come from an admin team member with you CC'd in on it so that the client clearly knows that you've been included in it, but this is just the final dot I's cross T's? The amount of time that accountants spend reformatting the wording of an invoice, oh, my God, that blows my mind.
Oh, man.
Stop it. Your clients don't care. If a client has ever come to you and said, I'm not paying your invoice because the layout and the style of font and the position of your logo is not to my liking, sure, but I can call bullshit on that one. I guarantee you no client has ever done that. They might not pay your invoice because it's too much or too, you know, or because the wording is incorrect based on what you've done, but it's not due to the formatting basically. Mm. So, and then the only other thing, what else is there? The lodgements. Again, slightly contentious whether you actually hit the lodge button or not. Do you need to if you've signed off on it, basically? That is, again, slightly there. There's a bit of a grey one as to who should be doing that and who shouldn't be. People have different opinions on that one. I am of the opinion that you don't necessarily, like an admin person could hit that button once it's all been signed, sealed and delivered. Don't get me wrong. Whip wash up at the end, admin. Closing off the job, admin. Oh, if an accountant's actually creating and setting up a job, oh, hard no. Remove that access instantaneously. Accountants should not be allowed to set up jobs ever. Sorry, I'm being very brutal and blunt here.
No, honest to God, I was just laughing to myself there because I think in that entire start to finish process, you said 2 parts of the job that weren't definitively not accountant. Or maybe like, sorry, the actual work and then 2 parts that weren't, yeah, the, you know, grey area.
Yeah, queries and lodgement.
Yeah, so... You've basically just given people, this is like such gold. So you've just given people a checklist of like, here are the things to get someone else to do in your business, start to finish. Like,
yeah.
I think we're going to have to turn that into a bloody checklist or resource or something. Cause like that, if I was an accountant being like, you know, our accountants are too overloaded or I'm too overloaded. And it's like, well, where do I start? Like it's top of that list. And get admin in place because you know, so obviously some of these are more technical than others. Some of these things are super low hanging fruit, you know, that like you don't need a lot of training to be able to work out, and then other stuff they might need to understand the business a bit more. Like, so maybe those come later if you don't have time to do it now. But like, there were so many on that list that were like, yeah, anyone could do that, like setting up a job, correct. Sending an invoice.
Yeah, like start empowering your admin team to understand the work that's required. So if you're asking, if you've got a list of queries that you want your client to answer and or just you're requesting relevant information, empower your admin team and actually teach them what you're looking for. They don't have to do the work, but that means that if they can eyeball it when the work comes back in, that saved you 10 minutes to go, yeah, all the bits are there, you can actually check it. Mm. It's just, yeah, it's a very interesting one that it still baffles me, and I think a lot of it comes from this idea of, I think it's a traditional mindset that comes from the idea of, I was remunerated on my chargeables and how much I used to bill out from my client perspective, as in the expectation that, you know, that third scenario is that I, you know, that's how I was remunerated, which meant that the only way that I could do that was to have a client base and I could control that client base and that list of clients, which meant that I could charge accordingly, which meant that I would reach my revenue targets. Sorry, but in my opinion these days, it's like that's not the way that the world works these days. It's an old mindset, because what that dictates is the longer you take to do a job, sure, you might be able to charge more, but is that an efficient way of doing business? No. Not to mention, that client isn't yours. That client is a client of the accounting practice that you work with or work for. You might hold the closest relationship with that client, but they aren't your client. They are engaged with the accounting practice that you are employed by, plain and simple. And I think accountants forget that sometimes as well, is that they feel the need to control that relationship to that nth degree. But I do think that it is changing. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm talking real traditional mindsets. The way of the world is changing, but I think that's where it's kind of stemmed from originally.
I get, like, it is hard to give up this control, though. Like, because it's from the entrepreneurial side too, this is just the classic mistake of thinking they have to do everything.
Yep.
Because they're the only person that can do anything good enough, you know. And this has been a slow journey for me, you know, like going... like you said, empowering people to do stuff. I think it's really easy to go when someone's working with you, for you, whatever, you want to check all their stuff. And then that creates this like loop of them always coming to you to get everything checked. Mm-hmm. And I've realized this like really badly myself now, whereas like today I've hit this like breaking point in the last couple of weeks where I'm, here we go, busy, too busy. Overwhelmed was the word I actually use. I've just got too much going on.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily busy. It's all too much shit vying for my attention.
Yep.
And like really quickly, I've gone from someone who I used to always check their work. They came to me with something today, literally today. And I was like, what? Just do it. I don't fucking care. You know? But I was like, I have made this happen by, you know, always wanting to see stuff and micro changing little bits here and there.
Yeah.
It's like, no. You just go and fucking do it. And you're going to have to do that a few times to make that the culture, so to speak. But yeah, it's a big mental shift for me. It's hard to let go of.
Oh, it is. I'm the exact same as you. Like, it's, you know, I'm a perfectionist just as much as the next person is. But I've also, I heard something a few years ago, which was somebody turned around and said, if you were ever trying to empower people, the best, like, you could turn around and go, look, that's probably not the way that I would have approached it, but, you know, I'm really glad that you got the outcome that you wanted. And that's you having to take a moment and go, oh, my God, that really hurts my soul the way that you did that. But did that get the outcome that we wanted? Mm. Yeah, like, how did you do it that way? And unless it was a really inefficient way, blah, blah, blah. But, like, if the desired outcome is achieved, then that's all you're kind of looking for. It's really hard though, because ultimately, especially as an entrepreneur or as a business owner, it's your business baby. It's a reflection of you, your values and everything that you stand for. So I do get, I appreciate that like no end, but I'm the same as you, James. It's just, you just get to a point where you're just like, I don't care. I'll rephrase that. I care, but as in, are you confident? Like, if this was your business, would you send it out? Yes. Great. Do it. Do I need to, like, if you've already checked it 20 times before, is there anything that you think I should review? And sometimes, like, I have this conversation with one of my team members who is more than capable, right? And then every now and again, he'll be like, I just need you to sanity check this one for me. So I'm like, all right, no props. We'll have a chat and we'll look at it. But for the most part, I'm like, dude, I trust you. I don't need this conversation.
There's, so good. There's another little framework. I don't know if it's Dan Martell's or not, but it comes from his virtual assistant book. But the 1-3-1 framework, and I feel like this is a solution but also an empowerment thing at the same time, is going like, when you come to me with a problem, I want you to come with one problem, three solutions, and then your recommended solution from
it. Love it. Right?
Yeah, and because then obviously it's easy for you to go, yeah, cool, I agree with that. Or, you know, maybe you can push back on it. But it's encouraged them to actually solve it and come up with the thing before coming to you, which, like...
Obviously, that is a game changer. I agree. Don't come to me with a problem without you coming to me with a suggested solution.
Mm.
100% agree with that.
Amy, I had no idea where this conversation was going to go. I actually, really all I had in my mind when we were going to do this was the pink glasses you show up with. Oh. And I was like, I know. I don't know where mine are. The kids have buried them somewhere.
There we go.
I wish we did this whole podcast with both of us wearing the think glasses. But I just didn't know. We are renovating upstairs and we've stripped back the kids' toys. So they're probably in that pile that are inaccessible pile right now. Damn it. Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you. This has been an absolute full of gold. We didn't get into any super fun stuff. Maybe we'll have to come back another time. Like, I had notes, man. I had lots of... cool, silly shit.
I know. One of the questions you asked, you're like, what have you overthought too much? I'm like, oh my God, I'm a woman. Haven't I overthought, James? How do you want me to go here? Come on.
I did it. I do love your answers to the pre-work. There is one thing I this could have been AI lying to me. A really good analogy I thought it found that apparently you had said somewhere before was you don't pay for a flight when you land. Is that you?
That is me. Yeah.
There you go.
It's in relation to upfront pricing or upfront payment, actually. Yeah. It's actually more in relation to upfront payment. And I use that analogy quite a bit, which is when you book a flight online, do you get to pay for that flight when you get to the destination? No, is the answer to that, right? You have to pay for it then and there when you accept and want to book that flight. And the analogy is because accountants will throw it back, but you know, we're providing a service. I'm like, well, what do you think an airline's doing? They are literally moving you from point A to point B. That's all they're doing. They're not even giving you anything. Qantas does still, sorry, and international flights do still, but you know what I mean? Like, they're not actually even doing anything for you. They're literally moving you from point A to point B, and you have to pay before you actually get on that flight. So why don't you have to pay before you start the work or do your accounting work? And then there's that whole, yeah, but you know, what if we get halfway through the job and you know, there's queries and you know, it blows out if they've already paid for it? I'm like, well, what do you do now? Do you pick up the phone and you call your client if you get halfway through the job and there's like, hey, you didn't tell me about those 10 extra rental properties? Because if you don't, that's incredibly shitty service. Because if you just do the work and then whack them with, instead of a, you know, the last 5 years, it's been $1,000 to do their work and now all of a sudden it's a $3,000 bill. If you just do that, that is a shitty client experience and you know, that's bad professional services. So you should be having that conversation regardless. And it's no different. If you've provided a quote and they pay for it up front, it was $1,000 to get halfway through, and they're like, oh, right, hang on. Red flags, this is going to be more. You should be picking up the phone and having that conversation, and then you just charge them again.
This is pretty standard stuff.
I know, right?
This is doing a reno. I know a lot of people don't do it this way, but like I said, we're doing a reno right now. There's lots going on here. They want money, some money up front and some money in the middle,
yes,
and some money at the end.
Correct.
And then they find something when they rip the walls off and go, shit, we didn't have that in the quote.
Yep.
Now it's a variation. This is like standard stuff.
Literally, it's standard stuff. It's like, why do it? Sorry, my other one is the greatest irony in the industry is the lack of accountability for accountants.
Oh, damn.
I know that's brutal. I'm sorry to say. But the inability or the avoidance for accountants to want to be held accountable is, that's why I'm saying it is a massive irony in the industry. You're accountants, be accountable. Why don't you want to be held to account? I mean, not... Most human beings don't get me wrong, but it's like if I say a price and I say a thing, then I don't know how to go back and actually, you know, not, you know, go against what I said originally. It's just have a courageous conversation.
That's the lack of client-facing accountants that you talked about. That is honestly correct. Like, I come from the engineering world, right? And accountants and engineers are like, if you buy into the disc profiling stuff, you know, we're all high C types. And so it's pretty hard. You know, those people generally don't want confrontation, don't want to talk to people, but yeah.
But it doesn't have to be confrontation.
Well, it can be people see it as that.
Correct, but it can be presented in a way of, look, there are these extra 10 rental properties. Do you just want me to do your tax work on this one that you told me about? Or would you like me to do the work on these extra 10, but there is an additional fee, this is what it's going to be? Your choice. I don't have to do them. You know what I mean? Like, it's just it's all the way that you position.
Good angle. Amy, again, so much gold. I love also that your newsletter is called Nuggets. It's Nuggets of Gold, isn't it? Or Friday or something like that. So yes. I did not mean to put gold in there intentionally.
No. Quick tips and snippets of gold is our weekly newsletter. Yeah.
Where can people go to get that?
You can go to www.claritystreet.com.au and there's a little newsletter button that you can sign up to. We do a monthly and then we do a weekly, just as I said, quick tip, two little quick videos. And that just shows you a bit of insight around a process, a procedure, something cool that's happening with tech, that kind of thing.
Awesome. And of course, you've got your app stack, which is very, very popular.
Ooh, which is getting a facelift at the moment.
Oh, damn. Okay.
So there's not going to be major differences, but there's a few apps that are, you know, a few ons, a few offers, a few like there's a bit of movement as the tech landscape evolves. So too must the app stack image. Mm-hmm. So yes, watch this space. It'll be out very soon.
Also at claritystreet.com.au.
Yes.
I'm sure people can will see us on a webinar. I think we're going to do one sometime soon.
Yay. And or at events anytime soon. We're around.
Yeah.
We're around.
Amy, again, thank you so much. This has just been an absolute knowledge bomb that I think has helped me as well as hopefully our audience.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me on, James. It's been such a joy to chat to you as always. Thanks, buddy.